A live presentation of CITR News.
CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast.
And now here's your host, Ian Turner.
Good evening. On the program today, we're excited to bring you the latest in campus and community news from Vancouver, from the Vancouver School Board's projected budget shortfall to a live phone call with the Vancouver Welcoming Committee. We'll hear from the Vancouver School Board trustee, Jane Bowie, and the president of the Vancouver Secondary Teacher Association, Anne Guthrie Warman. Later, we'll hear from Lauren Gill of the 2010 Welcoming Committee, whose organizers were denied a permit to stage the planned protest that is to coincide with the February 12th opening ceremonies. We'll have all this plus arts and your weekend weather forecast coming up this hour, right here on News 101. First, in local news, we bring you the coverage of the projected budget shortfall at the Vancouver School Board. The school board has recently announced that it may have to cut anywhere between $17 million to $36 million from their budget. News 101 reporter Andrew Longhurst spoke with Vancouver School Board trustee Jane Bowie about the cuts and the impacts it will have on the Vancouver School District.
So I'd like to just start by talking about the notices that teachers in the Vancouver School District received this past January. So 800 teachers have been notified that there could be possible layoffs. How do you feel about this?
It's extraordinarily upsetting. Looking at these sorts of numbers, it's unprecedented in the district.
Have there been
notices? Makes me angry.
Yeah. Have there been notices like this that have been sent out in previous years notifying teachers that there could potentially be a layoff but not giving them certainty about it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what it is it's the process is part of the collective agreement we have with teachers. So there's and the result of some arbitration decisions that happened, you know, years ago. So there's a whole process that's set up so that to ensure that layoffs are done in a way that's fair and gives proper notice and follows every aspect of the collective agreement.
Okay.
So that's been in place for quite a while. In recent years, the district hasn't had layoffs. The last time that there were layoffs, I believe, was 2004, and that was a year when the district had to cut $11 million out of the budget, and a similar process was followed. The number of letters that went out that time were around 400, and the actual layoffs ended up being about half that, if I remember correctly. Those are just sort of ballpark figures based on my memory rather than specific numbers.
Right.
So that the number, because it's the letters that go out, that went out, what they are determining what people's qualifications are. So that, when and if layoffs are done, that information is in place in order to determine.
The estimated shortfall is anywhere between, it's been estimated from $17 million to around $36 million, that's correct? That's the estimate?
That's correct, although sometimes, depending on what the most recent numbers are, sometimes it goes up around $38 million.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's... And those sorts of numbers, as I said, are unprecedented. Although in 2002, shortly after the Liberals came into power, the school district under the NPA board cut $26 million out of the budget, and that had a huge impact that the district Why have yet recovered from.
Right. Why are we seeing such a significant shortfall this year in particular?
This year in particular, well, it's a number of things, but the primary cause of it is a whole number of unfunded costs that are generated at the provincial level. That includes things like salary benefits for teachers that are, you know, those are negotiated provincially. Things like the carbon tax that, you know, we're having to pay the carbon tax credits to cover that for that project. As well as, you know, there's the medical, the MSP premiums that school boards are responsible for a large segment of our employees. It's a whole long list of things. Plus, there was the elimination of the annual facilities grant that happened last year, and school districts had to make cuts in order to do that, which then meant that districts such as ours, we eliminated every single bit of surplus that we might have had in the district that might have otherwise been able to carry forward to the coming year. Plus, there's that funding that districts would have had in the past that isn't there. So that, for our district, is $10.6 million and is about $110 million for the provincially. So that's one bunch of it. There's the implementation of all-day kindergarten that the province has implemented on the provincial basis and yet hasn't provided, they've provided some funding, but not sufficient funding to cover all of the extra costs that districts have to look at. So the Provincial Secretary Treasurer's Association, it's called ASBO, the Association of School Business Officers, which are, you know, a very, you know, conservative in the small c sense of the word organization. They are extraordinarily alarmed and have issued a statement saying just to maintain what we have this year, the province would have to inject an extra $300 million provincially just in order to keep what we have now. And that's after years of underfunding.
And this is just for public education in the province?
Just for public education in the province. And all the province in their last projection of what they would, like, they usually give sort of 3 years of what they say they will be funding. They have said they would be adding an extra $37 million provincially to the education budget. So that's, you know, the difference is about $260 million difference between what the province is saying they would give as opposed to what the most knowledgeable people in terms of the finances of school boards are saying is necessary just to maintain what we have, let alone, you know, improve and enhance what we have.
The education minister, Margaret McDermid, says that the funding shortfall, the projected shortfall, is due to declining enrollment, and that's the main reason, because enrollment, the funding is tied to enrollment in the school districts. How do you feel about that comment from the education minister?
Yeah, it's just incorrect. I was just on the phone with a trustee from Caribou Chilcotin who have just voted to that they would maintain their present services even if it means breaking the law. He feels that that what they know is that yes, they have declining enrollment. They can make the cuts necessary to cover that shortfall from the declining enrollment. That's what they've been doing, and that's what they continue to do. The problem are this astronomical and ever growing level of unfunded costs. I mean, for instance, with the carbon tax, not only do we have to, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter whether or not you're for or against the carbon tax, but there's all these other costs associated with it. School boards have had to hire extra staff in order to collect the numbers that the province says that they need. The province has said we have to bring in a software program called Smart Tool, which is another extra cost in order to be able to get that information to the province and collect that information. It's practically a weekly basis we receive information of more costs from the province that aren't being funded, are dictated by them.
Practically in the same sentence, though, Ms. McDermott has said that the province has, the Liberal government has been increasing funding for public schools in the province. How do you respond to that?
Well, someone put it in one way that I think is pretty easy to understand, and that's that we get it's like getting an allowance from your parents, and then them suddenly deciding to start charging your rent. That's more than far more than your allowance. And certainly, their per capita funding, it remains pretty constant. But there's all these added costs on top of that aren't funded from that per student funding that they always refer to when they talk about school funding. Plus, if you include things like the eliminations of the annual facilities grants, they eliminated literacy grants that for our district alone was $250,000 that they just eliminated without any warning whatsoever. So if you look at that, there's no way that our funding comes anywhere close to meeting our costs.
Many of the
as well as if you look at it in terms of percentage of the GDP, BC ranks amongst the bottom of all provinces in the country in terms of funding of education as a percentage of our GDP.
Right. You did mention programs that have been called already. Among those, secondary school sports programs have seen cuts already. How do you feel at a time when we're spending the city and the province are spending billions of dollars on the Olympics, which are coming in under two weeks? How do you feel when programs like secondary sports are being cut while funding for the Olympics is completely it's on the rise, and it will continue to probably be on the rise, and we may see costs that have been unannounced and not made public?
Yeah, I guess for me personally, it makes me furious. I think that if the people of this province had fully understood what this meant in terms of priorities of what was funded, if they had known how much the Olympics were really going to cost, at the same time as the level of cuts that were being faced in areas like education and the arts, let alone city services, I don't know if there would have been the same level of support for the Olympics as there was at the time.
Do people see this connection, though, between cutting sports programs and yet we're spending money on a sports a huge sports event? Is that not completely sort of ironic in a very sad way?
Yeah, it's extraordinarily ironic, and I think significant numbers of people do understand it and see it. It's one of those things that I keep pointing out. For instance, even just you look at the numbers that I gave you in terms of what the Secretary Treasurers have estimated for provincial needs just to keep our funding levels at the level that they are now, being $300 million, and you look at what the province has said that they will put in to put a new roof on BC Place, which is close to $500 million. So it really makes you question where the priorities of the province are, and yet at the same time the province, in their throne speech said that that in you know, really difficult economic times, there's no better place to invest than in education, and it was important to do so to maintain and expand education services. That's what they said in their throne speech in February.
Your colleague, the chair of the Vancouver School Board, Patty Baucus, has expressed concern over the possibility of the province completely eliminating school boards in districts across the province. Do you see this as a possibility and a threat?
Well, I mean, we know that it's something maybe I shouldn't say it. We know. We understand that this is something that the Liberals have looked at since they first came into office, and when they implemented the health boards and on a regional basis like they have. Our understanding is that there was consideration of moving then towards having school boards on it. Appointed school boards using this exact same regional map. And for one reason or another, that hasn't happened. I think that it's interesting that the rumors that this is something that the Liberals are considering tends to arise when school boards become the most vocal. Because that was the case in 2002 when there were the massive cuts provincially. There was a lot of school boards that spoke out, and that was when they were, you know, looking at it at that time. And school boards are speaking out again now, and all of a sudden we're starting to hear that. I think it's also, though, politically useful for the province to have school boards operate as sort of a buffer, so that people can be angry at their school board for what they do, rather than understanding that it's the province that is, bears the bulk of the responsibility.
Right. I want to talk about what these cuts could actually. First, I want to ask you: would the Vancouver School Board, and would you be considering running a deficit at this point in time? School boards across the province can't run deficits, unlike the provincial government. Is this something that you would be in support of doing?
At this point, unless the government provides the funding necessary for us to maintain our current level of services, because I don't think they're adequate. I would seriously look at. I guess my answer is yes. I would vote at this point in time. I would vote with the information I have now. I would vote against making cuts or in favor of running a deficit, whichever.
And are your colleagues on the school board, are other trustees in support of similar ideas?
I would say it's something that we haven't had any collective discussion of, but we haven't also taken it off the table as a possibility.
I want to ask you about what this, if there are significant cuts made, what this looks like for individual schools. What are classroom sizes going to look like, and what are special programs, music programs, sports programs going to look like?
It's our staff haven't done a lot of the specifics yet, so this is just sort of guesswork and projection at the present time. But every school, I can't see how every school won't be affected in one way or another. At the elementary level, class sizes are protected by the Bill 33 legislation, and they're pretty much already close to their maximum. So I don't think there would be a difference in class size at the elementary level. Could be at the secondary level. What would most likely happen would be reductions in electives and music programs and arts programs, and closing of school libraries, since we'd probably have to lay off teacher librarians. We'd have to be looking at closing schools. If not this year, in the future, in the near future, to try and recover costs. The board would also have to be looking at elimination of of certain programs if you know, depending on what the expenses required to run those programs are.
Okay. Well,
so it would be devastating, which is why I couldn't in good conscience vote to do any of those things at this point.
Right.
But I still am optimistic that if the province truly hears from boards right across the province and understands that we're not just doing some sort of political posturing, but in actual fact, public education itself is at stake, and it, the population understands that, the people understand that, and make sure that they let the government know that that we want to protect public education and put the funds necessary to protect it. I am optimistic that the province will inject the monies necessary for us to not have to take those measures.
Right. Other advocacy groups in Vancouver are using the Olympics as a way to draw attention to a lot of different social problems, not only in Vancouver but in the province. Is this an opportunity to talk to international media and say, yes, we're hosting the Olympics, but we can't even fund secondary school sports programs?
Yeah, I think that it's that education advocates, you know, probably should take advantage of the opportunity to do so. It's just a question of getting those voices out there to do so.
Okay. Well, thank you. I think we'll leave it at that. Thanks for talking to CITR.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Andrew also spoke with Anne Guthrie Warman, president of the Vancouver Secondary Teachers Association. Andrew inquired specifically about the impact that these projected cuts would have on Vancouver's secondary schools.
How did you initially feel after you heard the announcement that possibly 800 teachers could be seeing their jobs, losing their jobs and being laid off?
Well, of course, very concerned as president of the secondary teachers. The 800 letters that went out were qualifications letters. You know, in other words, they're part of if the board is considering laying off, they have to send these letters out early so that we get the qualifications of teachers as jobs come up, and they're placed by seniority and qualifications. But it is, of course, very worrying because we've got a potential budget deficit of between 18 and 36 million. And that means cuts have to be made if the government continues to download costs to us.
What does this mean specifically for schools, and what will secondary, you can speak especially about secondary schools, what will these impacts look like at individual schools and the classrooms at those schools?
Yes. Well, you know, every school has had, you know, up to 20 to 25 teachers who've received these notices. Currently, we have in place class size, class composition guidelines under Section 76 of the School Act. And even with this year, our schools are in violation of those guidelines. We have a great many classes that are over 30 and have more than 3 special needs. So if these cuts came at the classroom level, we wouldn't be fulfilling our mandate under Section 76 of the School Act. We'd have classes that were, you know, hugely in violation of that. So that's one piece. A lot of these are younger, newer teachers and just starting their career. It would be a shame to lose them or to lose even a few of them from our system, because we know if we can keep teachers in this profession for 5 years, they tend to stay. So it's very dispiriting for them, and I think for the schools, for all the schools. And we don't know where else cuts will come. You know, they may come in other programs and in the schools, because if there aren't enough teachers to staff the programs.
I spoke with Trustee Jane Bowie just the other day, and she cited the fact that the province is requiring the Vancouver School Board to implement and offer new programs and services, but is not providing providing adequate funding for that. Do you agree with that assessment?
That's correct, yes. And they're downloading costs. that should rightfully, you know, a collective agreement cost in terms of teacher salaries, for example, should not be downloaded to a board of education to pay. The government negotiated that, and now they're downloading those costs and other costs, and they took away the annual facilities grant. So, you know, that creates quite a structural deficit, and those costs just simply can't be borne without the board running a deficit budget or, you know, making serious cuts.
What about the board running a deficit? Is that something that the VSTA would be in favor of?
Well, we would certainly encourage this board to consider that as an option. It's, you know, it's not specifically allowed,
right.
But we would certainly encourage them to consider that before they make the draconian cuts that may be required if the deficit, you know, materializes for what it is, at the amount it is.
Education Minister Margaret McDermott stated that the funding cuts are a result of decreasing enrollment, and that she cited that as the primary reason that the VSB and other school boards across the province are seeing these cuts. Can you respond to that assessment?
Well, certainly in secondary, we have not seen a decrease in enrollment. There was a small decrease, and then this year there was an increase. So that's actually nonsense. The reason that there's a deficit is costs that should be borne by this provincial government are being downloaded to boards. That's where the problem is, and you know, we spend 2.5 times the amount that we're given on special needs education compared to what we're allocated by this government in order to meet the needs of our most vulnerable students. So it's nonsense to say, particularly in Vancouver Secondary, that it's because of decreasing enrollment. There was a small decrease in enrollment, and then it's gone back up again for us this year. But that does not cover the and you know, a decrease of 200 or 300 students overall doesn't make that amount of difference. It's downloading costs and taking away facilities grants that we need to keep our schools in you know, up to standard.
Why is the education minister providing these reasons if they are indeed inaccurate?
I don't know. You'd have to ask her. She probably will say they're not inaccurate. But
okay.
With respect to Minister McDermott, she isn't telling the whole story. And it's certainly, there certainly are, there are declining enrollments in some areas. I don't deny that. But in Vancouver, that's not the case at secondary level. And it's the downloading of those costs that's causing our deficit and the taking away of grants.
We're just about a week away from the opening of the Olympic Games, mm-hmm. and we're seeing an incredible amount of money being spent on these games, and costs that were not anticipated, although by some they were. But the government has said a lot of these costs could not be anticipated. And we're, at the same time, we're seeing cuts to secondary school sports mm-hmm. programs.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I feel that it's disgraceful. And I have to tell you that it's interesting that The Guardian in the UK, Sports Illustrated, a number of publications, international publications,
have commented on it
already. I just looked at something online from The Guardian and a Guardian journalist the other day, Sports Illustrated. A number of them have commented on the fact that, you know, the optics of that are diabolically bad. The fact that our, you know, we couldn't even get we had a grant taken away for school sports, and this particular minister said that students could walk and dance in the park. I mean, the naivete and the spin that they're putting on this is extraordinary, in my view. And, you know, billions of dollars on this bloated Olympic spectacle. I think the city is rightfully saying enough's enough. I mean, I think people are absolutely disgusted by it. And the fact that billions of dollars are being spent on security while schools have to lose programs, including sports programs, I think points to that grim irony.
Is the VST and teachers and students as well, are they organizing to draw attention to this?
Well, I think there will be Olympic protests. You know, the problem is when the Olympics are gone on, no one's going to listen to to the issues. But it seems to me that other journalists are coming into the city and seeing these things for what they are. I don't know if there'll be protests. We're certainly going to be advocating with this government to do more and to consider the optics of this bloated spectacle. Alongside making, you know, boards like ours having to make, you know, draconian cuts to our schools. That's, I think, the optics of that are very, very poor, and this government should consider that.
What can the VSTA be doing in the next coming months to respond to this projected shortfall?
Well, we are meeting with trustees. We are talking to trustees about the issues that they're facing, the serious decisions that they need to make. We're also part of advocacy groups, a broader coalition of parents who will be advocating on behalf of our board and our teachers and our students. So there's an advocacy piece that's going ahead as well. And you know, I think teachers will be called upon to make their feelings known to both the government and the board about this. You know, this level of deficit funding.
There's also talk, and Patty Baucus, the chair of the VSB, is concerned that the Liberal government may completely do away with school boards across the province. Is this a concern to you?
Well, yes, it would definitely be a concern to me.
And do you think this is? Do you think this could potentially happen? Is there merit to this concern? In this talk?
Well, they've floated those kinds of ideas before amalgamation, as they did with the health boards. And I don't think that's a good idea at all. Certainly not a good idea in the larger metropolitan areas. You know, we have board of trustees because we have local government, and it's the best way to ensure a kind of hands-on model of governance. So, no, we would not be in favor of that, and we think it would be, you know, it would be nothing more than a cynical cost-saving exercise and, you know, centralizing power, which we would not agree with.
Okay. Well, finally, are there any additional comments you should leave our listeners with?
You know, if anybody wants to let the government know what they think about the optics of this particular situation we're in right now and the cuts that our schools are facing, and you know, you're a university radio. We take, you know, students and teachers who've freshly graduated from university, and we try to, you know, give them jobs in this system that will give them meaningful work, and you know, for the rest of their career. And it's very, very sad for us to take young, keen, eager young teachers to and have them faced with this kind of a situation early in their career. So in that regard, you know, universities can help as well, I think, and students can help by expressing their concerns. Our student teachers that we've worked with from UBC and SFU have always been incredibly good about coming out and supporting teachers on these in these events.
Well, great, Anne. Thank you for the time. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Take care now.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks to News 101 reporter Andrew Longhurst for those two interviews. We're going to take a quick break now, but stay tuned. When we come back, we'll have a live phone interview with the 2010 Welcoming Committee. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM.
LiveVan.com is Vancouver's most reputable community-driven concert calendar. New shows are listed daily by the city's most prominent promoters, but also by you. The musicians and fans were the driving force of our local music scene. LiveVan.com's listings are different because they're personalized. They're integrated with local music directories that are constantly updated by the bands, musicians, and businesses who refer to them as they pick locations and lineups for their newest upcoming shows. And no one's barred from contributing, since we all know fans know more about the players than anyone. So visit LiveMusicVancouver.com for the latest major and independent event listings. And while you're at it, check out our archives and discover how closely we all work together in this community, putting on the shows you love.
To Tuesday, February 23rd, beginning at sunset in Montreal, broadcasting live on your local campus and community radio station.
Sometimes we get that instant homelessness. We didn't expect to be homeless, and we find ourselves on the street because of an eviction or a notice.
Canada's largest talk show on poverty and homelessness.
We have a mayor who compared poor people to pigeons publicly and said that if you stop feeding them, they'll go away.
The 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, broadcasting February 23rd to 24th. A 14-hour live radio show from frozen street corners across Canada. Call in live, join the discussion.
Our demand from the federal government is $2 billion a year for social housing units across Canada. That'll just help us to start catching up to the 15 years that we've lost in building social housing in this country. It's really a glaring example of the negligence of the government.
Visit www.ckut.ca for more info.
The Homelessness Marathon will be broadcasting live from Vancouver on Tuesday, February 23rd at 8 p.m. as CITR 101.9 FM partners with CJSF 90.1 FM and Co-op 102.7 FM to bring you an hour of interviews and stories of how the 2010 Olympics are affecting homelessness in Vancouver. Visit CITR.ca for more information.
Hello, Vancouver. This is Carolyn Mark. You're listening to CITR 101.9 on your FM dial.
CITR News is committed to providing you with in-depth Olympic coverage from an alternative perspective. As part of this coverage, we are launching a new Eyes on the Street feature, where Vancouverites will have a chance to tell their Olympic story. We want to hear your perspective on life in Vancouver during the Games. That's why we're inviting you to be CITR's Eyes on the Street this February. If you're at an event, a protest, a celebration, or even simply on the bus, tell us about it. There are three ways to file a report. Call our Eyes on the Street hotline at 604-822-5334. Email news at CITR.ca or tweet CITR News. Then sit back and wait for your report to be featured on the next edition of News 101, which airs Monday and Friday at 5 p.m., right here on CITR, 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Welcome back. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, your campus and community news source. The current time is 5:37, and it's time for your weekend weather report. And for that, we turn to Denise Dydick, who joins us live in studio. Denise, what's in store for us?
Well, here's your weekend weather report for February 5th through 7th. We're continuing with very mild weather for the winter season. Because of that, here are some more facts on the occasional climate pattern of El Niño. El Niño is characterized by an oceanic component and an atmospheric component called the Southern Oscillation, which changes surface pressure in the tropical western Pacific. When the warm oceanic effect is in place, surface pressures in the Pacific West are high, causing less rain and warmer temperatures in the north. We'll be seeing this effect in our local weekend weather. Tonight will be partly clear with a low of 4 degrees. Saturday will be a mix of cloud and sun, high of 9, low of 4. Sunday will be partly sunny as well, high of 9 and low of 3 degrees. That's your weekend weather, brought to you by the Storm Club of UBC. Currently it's 8 degrees and cloudy at YVR. For News 101, I'm Denise Diotic.
And as always, thank you very much for that, Denise. We really appreciate it.
In local news, the Olympics are mere moments away, and the city is beginning to taste the upcoming flavor of what is to come. On the phone, we have Lauren Gills, an organizer of the 2010 Vancouver Welcoming Committee. The committee had planned to stage a rally with the arrival of the Olympic flame, but they were denied a permit by the city of Vancouver. Here's Andrew Longhurst, live in studio, to speak with Lauren Gills.
Hi, Lauren. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Andrew.
So, can you give us a little idea of what the protest is on the 12th and who's putting it on and if there will be speakers, and just give us a rundown.
Absolutely, yeah. The 2010 Welcoming Committee is made up of, it's a very broad committee made up of community organizers, activists, educators, people who work in social services, and just a wide, you know, it's librarians involved, just a wide range of folks that have gotten together to organize, like you said, a rally to coincide with the opening ceremonies of the Olympics. What we've planned so far is we're going to have, on February 12th at 3 p.m. at the Vancouver Art Gallery, we're going to be having a rally. We're going to feature a couple different speakers. someone who's going to speak on environmental issues, someone who's going to speak on Aboriginal issues and on the topic of no Olympics on stolen native land. We're going to have people speak about housing issues and cuts back to services, union busting, and I mean, the list goes on in the ways that the Olympic Games, the 2010 Winter Olympic Games, have affected our community. So we'll also have some fun games. There's going to be childcare provided for anyone who's got their kids, but we'll be having, you know, the Poverty Olympics, I think, is going to come along and do some kind of mock sports and political satire, so that should be fun. And then we're marching to Beatty Street to GM Place for the opening ceremonies, and we're going to greet them with a true welcome, you know, in regards to how the city's feeling about the Olympic Games.
Right.
So.
And the rally starts at on the north side of the Vancouver Art Gallery. Now,
yeah.
There is an exhibition there. And,
yes, there is.
And to my understanding, the city denied the 2010 Welcoming Committee a permit. And is that correct?
Well, you know, what happened was in the beginning, we usually when booking the art gallery, although some activists prefer not to book art gallery, prefer not to book spaces or prefer not to notify the police before marching the streets, but we decided that we were going to notify the art gallery about booking the space, and usually that just entails having access to their electricity, and it's been a traditional protest ground for, well, ever since I've been in Vancouver, which is my whole life. So we went through the regular process, which is basically filling out forms that the art gallery provides us to book the space, and when we called to ask for those forms, they said that they are currently not taking any booking. They said that they would be willing to take our form once we filled them out, but they could not confirm or deny that we had the space, and they could also not, promise us that there wouldn't be anything there. So in the beginning, we didn't really get a clear response from them as to whether or not we could book the space, which for us was a huge concern, of course, as you can imagine.
Right, and have you been in contact with the Vancouver Police Department about that the march that will take place between the art gallery and to BC Place?
Yeah, there's been a lot of ongoing debate back and forth, as I'm sure you've heard in the papers, just in regards to whether or not we can exercise our democratic right to march the streets. And I think that
what's the VPD? How have they responded?
Well, they've said that there's, well, they talked a little bit about protest zones, free speech zones, and that was thrown out there a lot a couple months ago, and then I remember VSU released a statement saying that there's not going to be protest zones and we're going to allow them to march as long as it's a peaceful protest. So, you know, it hasn't really, we haven't had a definite kind of statement from them, and it's been, for us as activists, it's been really confusing and frustrating, because if we're not given, regardless of whether or not we'll do it, regardless of what their response is, but if we're not given clear rules or regulations from them, then they cannot hold us accountable to any of our actions. I mean, they haven't at this point told us about protest zones. They haven't told us we cannot march. So we're going to march, I guess, essentially.
Are you concerned at all, though, about the response that you could receive from the Vancouver Police Department and other security forces here during the games because there's been such an unclear message from the VPD?
Well, I think I'm concerned about their response in general. I mean, if you look at the APEC protests, the response from the police hasn't necessarily been a safe or a violence-free approach that they take. It's very aggressive, and I think for us as activists, and I'm not going to speak on behalf of my committee, but in terms of myself, you know, my number one concern when people ask about violence during protests is that you cannot control the police. I'm not concerned about activists, especially at the Welcoming Committee. This is a family-friendly, you know, type of event. I'm more concerned about the way that the police will react.
Right. Right. Well, thank you, Lauren. So,
and agent provocateurs, of course, which I'm sure you've heard a lot about.
Right. So February 12th, what time again?
3 p.m. Vancouver Art Gallery, free food by Food Not Bombs. There'll be free speech, of course, and free games for all those people who can't afford tickets to the
Great.
Games. Great.
Well, thanks for talking with us, Lauren.
Yeah,
really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Andrew.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks to Andrew for that interview.
It's now time to consider your weekend in arts, and for that we have the Arts Report. Arts reporter Paul Zerbier attended a performance of China at the Frederick Wood Theatre. For his review, here's Paul.
On Tuesday night, I attended the opening of China at the Frederick Wood Theatre at UBC. China is presented as part of the Cultural Olympiad and is also part of this year's International Performing Arts Festival, or PUSH. China's performed by Australia-born writer and photographer William Yang and features Chinese musical accompaniment by Nicholas Ng. On stage, William Yang presents China as a travel memoir of his trips to China over the past 20 years. He shares with his audience photos and stories of the people he meets along the way, as well as his personal experience with some of China's more popular tourist destinations. What I found interesting about Yang's presentation was the honest and intimate portrayal of his interactions and the subtle humor which he views the many odd situation he finds himself in. He shows a side of China that Westerners don't normally see, like the inside of small apartments, the lunchroom at steel factories, and the general side of the road that one often experiences when traveling between places in a foreign country. Also, the various people he meets seem to be relaxed and themselves in front of his camera, and many of his photos capture candid moments of his acquaintances as they're talking or eating or playing up going up a mountainside. Using two large projection screens, Yang talks almost nonstop throughout his presentation, pausing only occasionally at particular personal moments in his travels. However, talking to some of the audience after the performance, I was surprised to find that quite a few people were somewhat disappointed in the presentation. They felt Yang's travel photos and monologues should have been more politically focused and highlighted some of the many hardships, injustices, and environmental issues that remain central to life in China. But although I agree those issues are important and should never be ignored, I also feel that China can still be presented as a place of personal self-discovery, as it clearly is for Yang. So for those of you who are looking for a challenging and politically charged presentation on the current conditions in China, Yang's performance will probably not be satisfying for you. But for those who would like to share an intimate, honest, and often humorous memoir of one man's journey back to the country of his heritage, then I suggest you go see China, playing as part of the Push Festival and the Cultural Olympiad at the Frederick Wood Theatre at UBC. China starts nightly at 7:30 p.m. until February 6th. For the Arts Report, this is Paul Zerbeer.
Thanks to Paul for that report, and you can catch the full Arts Report every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, it'll be sports. Thanks for listening. This is News 101, and for everyone here, have a great weekend.